to address this kind of a catastrophe, there really isn't one. Now, I hear from the railroad companies, they'll say they'll take full responsibility, but I didn't see it in other parts of the country. They didn't take full responsibility when people died. They didn't take full responsibility when rivers were destroyed. How can you fix that? It's impossible to take full responsibility. Their primary interest, the railroad companies at least, is to get the rails running again so they can have commerce flowing. I can guarantee you that the folks who are proposing these projects don't care either. Now, they're going to probably throw money at it and try to fix it up, but we're going to be the ones who bear that responsibility. We're going to be the ones who have to live within a legacy of contamination and pollution for decades to come. And so we have to do everything we can to stop it. Now, coal and oil, we can do that. I've seen coalitions like this form before, and they work. They really do. The environmental community, the religious community, the tribes, that's an unstoppable coalition. We need to tell the folks who are proposing this, our decision makers, that we don't want coal in our backyard. We don't want coal in our lungs, and we don't want coal in our streams or our rivers. Thank you.
And you were just listening to the Tuesday Evening News News in Depth about local vigils tomorrow targeting Senator Ron Wyden. And there will be two local vigils actually tomorrow targeting Senator Ron Wyden. The vigils will be asking for Wyden's support for the deal with Iran. Senator Wyden is still on the fence about whether to support the deal. There are over 200 such vigils taking place nationwide on Wednesday, August 26th in Portland. And in Portland, a vigil will take place at noon at Senator Wyden's office at 911 Northeast 11th Street. And in Beaverton, there will be a vigil at 5 p.m. on Wednesday at Southwest 5th and Hall across the Beaverton Library. Both vigils will call on Ron Wyden to support the deal with Iran. Stay tuned for preference.
Kick it! KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
It takes all of us to keep KBOO strong. KBOO is your radio station. Did you know that you can give gifts of stock to KBOO? We are able to quickly turn these donations into support for the important daily work of KBOO. How do you do this? Call 503-231-8032, extension 201, or email monica@kboo.org for information on how to make a stock gift. Thank you for supporting KBOO Community Radio.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is a new LGBT program here at KBOO. It's produced by Wild Planet Radio, another local community radio station, and it is called Prism. That will be followed by Preference at 6:30. If you're wondering who you were listening to from 5:45 to 6, it was Mayor Charlie Hales, and then Paul Lumney of the Columbia River Tribal Fishing Commission, who both spoke at the Lummi Totem event last night in opposition to the fossil fuel infrastructure expansion in the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned now for Prism.
Welcome to Prism PDX, a weekly radio magazine show focusing on the LGBT community. Today we have local, regional, national, and global news stories for you, plus a sports and entertainment feature. Welcome to Prism PDX. I'm Bobby.
I'm Anna.
And I'm Jerry. A local small business with an LGBTQ history announces their closing. Seattle police continue their search for an arsonist. A presidential candidate comes out against same-sex marriage. The Ashley Madison information release has LGBTQ consequences. And a masked man in the Ukraine throws smoke bombs at an LGBT rally. Bobby?
A video has captured a man with a sledgehammer pushing a dancer on Portland Waterfront Park. 1 million moms attack Jazz Jenner, star of reality show I Am Jazz. Historic Baptist Church adopts gay non-discrimination policy. And in China, a student sues over textbooks that demonize LGBT people. Anna?
The White House hires first openly transgender woman. Chelsea Manning has been found guilty. And Tamara Dominguez becomes 17th transgender woman killed this year.
Let's get started with local stories. Jerry?
It's hard for an independent business to succeed. According to the Small Business Administration, one-third of all new small businesses fail in the first 2 years, and 50% will close within 5 years. So the announcement that the relatively new Moreland Farmers Pantry is closing isn't as a shock. They've been open for just a year and 2 months. But there may be more to this bittersweet success or failure story than meets the eye. Before the store opened, the owners got some bad publicity in the neighborhood. In a 2013 posting captured in a video screenshot from the owner, Chauncey Childs, operating under a pseudonym, she said that although she didn't judge gay people or their desire to be married, and it isn't her place to form opinions about their lifestyle, she did say that she thought gay marriage would cause our civilization to disintegrate because we're abandoning our principles as a society. After a neighbor posted a video of this and similar comments the business owner had made on social media, some locals said they wouldn't shop at the new store even before it had opened. According to a July 2014 KYN-TV news article, business at the store was slow as it opened, possibly because of a small boycott. If you look at comments on various business review sites since the store opened, shoppers complained about a poorly stocked store, inattentive and rude employees, very high prices, and more than half of the reviews commented about the owner's position on same-sex couples. Now on the business's Facebook page and homepage, there's a notice that they're closing their doors soon, and they invite people to come in and get great deals on products before they're all gone. Then they thank their customers and local vendors and farmers who supported the store. Residents of Portland's Westmoreland neighborhood were originally excited for the arrival of a 5,000-square-foot store, as it advertised with non-genetically modified products. But excitement turned to anger for some after the comments of the owner's personal Facebook page were made public. The owners, Childs, and her husband, John Childs, tried to make it clear that their personal views as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints wouldn't affect how they ran their store. According to Proud Queer Monthly magazine, the Childs later made a donation to Portland's nonprofit Equity Foundation, which fights for social, economic, and political equity for the LGBTQ community. Though one of the foundation's board members resigned over that donation, the board ultimately accepted it. The market also hired gay workers. Quoting, "I am gay and I work at the Moreland Farmers Pantry," a woman stated in Portland's Mercury News. She said she and her co-workers, some of whom were also gay, were tired of people shouting obscenities at the store. Reaction to the grocer's looming closure has been varied. Some were ecstatic. One Facebook user wrote, "This is so freaking awesome. Bigotry doesn't sell in Portland." Others were disappointed. One said that she was so sad to see things had come to this, and in a sarcastic note, blamed it on the gay rights movement. The grocer declined comment for the Oregonian story as to why the store is closing, and it's unclear when the store will actually close. They have promotions advertised running through October. Bobby?
A man carrying a sledgehammer pushed a member of a dance group who was practicing on Portland's waterfront last week because he apparently didn't like the dancer's moves.
There was a man on a bench that was watching us for about 2 hours of our rehearsals. And when we got to the solo portion of the rehearsal, it wasn't until I went up to dance that something must have triggered him. I'm assuming it's because I'm a gay man.
And why would you assume that?
I was dancing really flamboyant to Christina Aguilera.
Like, okay.
I was wearing my little shorts and my pink tank top, and I was just giving
and
it.
And you were giving, you were living.
I was doing the most.
Yes, and so. And you felt that at that moment, that's when this I almost said him gentleman, but this guy got up, and what happened?
Well, lucky for me, he didn't really do much other than just pass by me and push me. But he did have a sledgehammer, which was the most controversial thing about it. Like, why is someone walking around with a sledgehammer in the first place?
Yeah, right.
Especially in a public place with children around.
According to group members, the man threw the sledgehammer into the river before officers arrived. No one was hurt. According to Police Sergeant Pete Simpson, officers later spoke to the man, 22-year-old John Palin. Simpson said the man is a transient and officers have had contact with him in the past. One of the officers on the scene talked to witnesses but found no one had been injured, so Palin was released without a citation or arrest. The group has not danced at the waterfront park since the confrontation. Let's take a quick break here on Prism PDX and we'll be back with some regional and national news.
Welcome back to Prism PDX. The Seattle Police Department continues to seek a person of interest in a fire that appears to have been deliberately set earlier this month at Neighbors, a Seattle gay night spot. In broad daylight at about 11:15 on the morning of Friday, August 7th, security camera footage shows a man walking into the alcove where the famed back alley entrance is to Seattle's largest gay dance club. Then about 3 minutes later, he walks back out and smoke is seen coming out of the alcove, and it's clear that a fire has been set. That fire was started when nobody was in the building, fortunately. The business was closed and it was done during the day.
Luckily, there was nobody in the building this time.
And what's even more curious is that the man in the video knows he's being recorded, yet he doesn't cover his face or make any attempt to not be seen by the cameras. The Seattle Fire Department arrived about 10 minutes after the blaze began to find the fire had already been extinguished by the nightclub sprinkler system. Nobody was injured, and according to Steve Tracy, Neighbors general manager, only about $300 worth of damage was done. The fire was set on an exterior door that has plexiglass windows, so the fire did not spread into the building very far. Tracy directed his team to fix the damaged door and replace the carpet, and within an hour or so, there was no trace that anything had ever happened. Tracy had his team make the quick repairs, saying it's important for an LGBTQ business, if they're attacked, to show resilience and to let their customers know it's safe to come back.
It's not just a bar. Neighbors is more than that. And to many people, it's family. It's a home away from home.
Tracy has hired extra security, and the Seattle police are making extra patrols around the business. In cooperation with the nightclub, Seattle police have released video footage of the man. Detectives are seeking his identity, who they call a person of interest. This arson is unlike the one that occurred at Neighbors on New Year's Eve 2014, in which a man doused a stairwell that leads to the upstairs mezzanine with gasoline and put it on fire at midnight. There were nearly 800 people in the club at that time. Quick action by U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Christopher Bostwick put that fire out before anyone was injured. Bostwick had been at the club for a New Year's celebration with friends. He felt heat from the stairwell and saw the fire glow. He immediately went into action, putting the fire out even before the fire suppression system came on. 30-year-old Musab Masari of Bellevue, Washington, is now serving a 10-year sentence after his conviction for that arson. Police used video surveillance pictures at that time and worked to get leads in the gay community. Masari blamed his actions on alcoholism, but associates say he was homophobic and bragged to them about setting the fire. Police and FBI arrested Masari as he was about to board a plane with a one-way ticket to Turkey. Police are asking anyone who recognizes the man in this current arson video to contact their police detective department. Anna?
For the first time in U.S. history, the White House has hired an openly transgender person. Rafi Friedman Gerspan, formerly a policy advisor for the National Center for Transgender Equality's Racial and Economic Justice Initiative, has been appointed to a senior position in the White House Office of Presidential Personnel. She is set to begin her new position as an outreach and recruitment director in the Presidential Personnel Office next week. The Obama administration has appointed openly transgender people into federal government positions before, but none whom would be considered a White House staffer. Friedman Gerspan's new role will be to oversee the selection process for presidential appointments and work to recruit qualified candidates for service in departments and agencies across the government. a gay former lawmaker in the Massachusetts State House and executive director of the AIDS Action Committee of Massachusetts, called Friedman Gerspan a role model in reference to her days working for the state legislature. Among her many contributions, she was instrumental in helping pass the transgender equal rights law. I am proud to see her continue to lead by example as she takes her voice and her passion to the White House. Her hiring is a symbol of progress for the transgender community, but without a doubt, I know it will be her skill and hard work that will benefit many. And now from Kansas City, Missouri, Tamara Dominguez, 36, was hit by a truck early last Saturday, making her the 17th transgender woman of color killed this year.
A witness told police that the victim got out of an SUV, which then ran her over three times before driving away.
Kansas City police say they cannot yet say if the murder was a hate crime. Dominguez's family say police found her car near Independence Avenue, though they don't know why she was in that area or whom she may have been with in the truck. Witnesses say they saw a black Chevy Avalanche at the scene. Police have determined that the driver initially hit Dominguez, then ran over her body at least two more times. She was well loved by her family, who are trying to raise money for her funeral service and to return her body to her family in Mexico. The link is available at our website, wildplanetradio.com. And finally, convicted national security leaker Chelsea Manning was found guilty on Tuesday for violating prison rules and will receive 3 weeks of recreational restrictions, her attorney said. The transgender Army private was accused of having a copy of Vanity Fair with Caitlyn Jenner on the cover and an expired tube of toothpaste, among other things. Her attorney, Chase Strangio, stated in a news release that Manning was convicted of all charges after a closed four-hour disciplinary board hearing in which she had no counsel. Manning received 21 days of recreational restrictions limiting access to the gym, library, and outdoors. The maximum punishment she could have faced was indefinite solitary confinement. The intelligence analyst, formerly known as Bradley Manning, was convicted in 2013 of espionage and other offenses for sending more than 700,000 classified documents to WikiLeaks while working in Iraq. She is serving a 35-year sentence at Fort Leavenworth. The U.S. Army has declined to release any information on the results of the hearing, citing the Privacy Act of 1976. Strangio said in a statement, "When I spoke to Chelsea, she wanted to convey the message to supporters that she is so thankful for the thousands of people from around the world who let the government know that we are watching and scrutinizing what happens to her behind prison walls." Strangio credited public support for keeping Manning out of solitary confinement. Petitions signed by 100,000 people were delivered Tuesday to the U.S. Army by digital rights group Fight for the Future and others. Bobby?
1 million moms, OMM, the media watchdog arm of the anti-hate group American Family Association, has reached a new low, as they have referred to Jazz Jennings, the transgender teen who is the star of the TLC reality series I Am Jazz, as someone's mistake. On Wednesday, OMM sent an email to their followers titled, "God doesn't make mistakes, but humans do." The email contains their latest action alert aimed at getting their 75,000 followers to put pressure on Revlon by having them pull ads for Mitchum deodorant from the reality series. Critic Brian Lowry of Variety magazine praised I Am Jazz, calling it an important series, in an admirable departure for the attention-seeking network. Simply told and heartfelt, the show should add a welcome dimension to the education process, capturing the challenges associated with sexual identity at such a vulnerable age.
You're listening to Prison PDX, and we'll be right back with more national news.
Hi, my name's Benjamin, and I'm here to tell you about Know Your City, a local nonprofit connecting people to better know Portland. Know Your City's programs include queer tours of Portland, as well as publications about local LGBTQ civil and human rights activists like Darcel and Kathleen Sadat. Know Your City has an array of social justice programs planned for the coming year. Just go to our website at knowyourcity.org to learn about all the ways our organization is creating our place called Portland. That's knowyourcity.org.
We're back on Prism PDX. Donald Trump continues to be an outspoken opponent of same-sex marriage, but he has no problem with gay employees in the workplace. In an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, the GOP presidential hopeful told Chuck Todd that he is fine with affirmative action and employee non-discrimination ordinances, noting that he didn't think it's a worker's sexuality that should be the reason for him or her being fired. He says it's a big decision, and there's a lot of discussion about it, and I guess it's getting a lot of negative rulings right now. He's willing to go into the courts and what they're saying, he said. I don't think someone's sexuality should be a reason to be fired. In July, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission ruled that workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is illegal under federal law. The New York Times reported that story. Still, gay and lesbian workers can be fired for their sexuality in 29 states, while those who identify as transgender aren't protected in 32 states. And if you think it's suddenly becoming more accepting of the gay and lesbian community, Trump reiterated his opposition to same-sex marriage in the interview, noting that he was a very conservative person. He says he lives in New York, a place full of gays, and he thinks they're great, but he's not in favor of gay marriage. Bobby?
The South Carolina church that was founded by the Southern Baptist Convention's first president has adopted a new non-discrimination policy that will allow for the congregation to not only marry same-sex couples, but also ordain openly gay, lesbian, and transgender ministers. Dr. Jim Dant, senior minister of the 184-year-old First Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina, explained in a recent interview with Greenville Online that his church, which is no longer Southern Baptist, voted earlier this year to take up a new policy that does not allow the church to discriminate in any facet of its ministry on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity.
The decision that we made is completely non-discriminatory. We do not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. That if a person comes into the church as a follower of Christ on their journey, they are welcome to experience and express that journey in any way that any other person in these pews are able to express and live out the rituals of their faith. We don't discriminate with ordination, with marriage, with teaching, with serving on committees based on gender orientation, gender identity, or sexual orientation.
The vote came after members of First Baptist went through a six-month discernment process on how the church should handle the LGBT community. And now on to global news. Jerry?
Masked men on Saturday hurled smoke bombs into a venue in the Ukraine city of Odessa where gay rights activists were to hold a forum after deciding against marching in defiance of a ban. They threw several smoke bombs at the participants before running away. An Odessa Pride spokesman added that no one was hurt in the attack. LGBT activists were planning to hold a forum on the history of gay rights in the Black Sea port city after a local court banned the planned march over fears that it would spark violence. A Pride spokesman denounced the ban, saying it was illegal and violated their constitutional right of assembly. A handful of activists demonstrated near the town hall in defiance of the ban. They drew taunts from passerbys. A French news correspondent saw an elderly woman trying to take a placard from one of the demonstrators that read, "Dignity has no color." Police quickly intervened to defuse the confrontation. A prominent extreme nationalist group politician who was once central to the demonstrations in Kiev that toppled the Russian-backed president last year had voiced fierce opposition to the LGBT event. "We won't beat the gays, but this march will not take place," he said. A gay pride march in the capital of Kiev in June, the second in the nation's post-Soviet history, was marred by scuffles after activists were attacked by far-right nationalists. About a dozen people were injured during that event. A socially conservative country locked in a bruising war with the pro-Russian insurgents is seeking a closer alliance with Europe and remains keen to promote civil liberties freely enjoyed in much of the West. But homophobia remains rampant in a nation where the conservative Orthodox Church wields considerable influence and nationalist far-right groups have grown more prominent. Bobby?
And now from China. Chen Qian, a 21-year-old college student at a southern Chinese university, wants the school to stop carrying psychiatry and psychology textbooks that say homosexuals have mental or physical issues and need to be healed. She filed the case on August 14th, and the Beijing No. 1 Intermediate People's Court told CNN it has accepted the case. Chen said she was horrified when she first came across the textbooks in 2013. At that time, Chen was a freshman and confused about her sexuality. She had turned to the textbooks for an academic take on homosexuality and as an alternative to searching for answers online. Chen said what she read prompted her to see a psychologist. Chen has since come out to friends, and the court case comes after months of petitioning local authorities and courts about the books, which she says are outdated even according to China's own laws. In 2001, homosexuality was removed from an official list of mental illnesses for clinical treatment. This followed a 1997 decision to decriminalize it. In the last two decades, China's LGBT community has made gains in social acceptance. Young gay and lesbian activists are increasingly pushing for more rights and recognition, taking heart from June's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court decision to extend same-sex marriage rights across all 50 states. Chen said she was surprised that the Beijing court took the case, and she thinks it's a remarkable victory in her quest to make sure homosexuality is accurately represented in textbooks. Anna?
ISIS has released video footage that depicts two blindfolded men being thrown off the roof of a building by Islamic extremists, only to be stoned to death by a group of people which included children. The over 6-minute long film shows a crowd listening to a speech justifying the murders. The two bound men are then thrown from the roof before the crowd rushes towards the two bodies. This is the latest in a series of killings under the ISIS regime, who have declared LGBTQ people to be the worst of creatures. Jerry?
We've heard about some of the prominent people who have been outed because of the Ashley Madison member list leak, such as Josh Duggar, the right-wing born-again Christian who not only has now confessed to being a pedophile, but had two Madison accounts. Little has been said, however, about the LGBTQ subscribers who have now been outed. In many countries, being gay and found out can lead to severe punishment and often the death penalty. Similarly, for women who were on the list soliciting sex, and there were some 15,000 active U.S. military customers. As the list is being reviewed, we've found 1,200 members from Saudi Arabia, where being gay or cross-dressing can be punished ranging from public flogging to the death penalty. There were 1,450 accounts from Turkey, where being LGBTQ would prevent you from joining the military, and more. And there were some 53 accounts from residents of Qatar, where women can be put to death for adultery and homosexuals can be in prison for 5 years. These are just some of the potentials related to the Ashley Madison release of client personal information.
We're coming right back on Prism PDX with some sports.
We're back on Prism PDX, a weekly radio magazine show focusing on the LGBT community. I'm Anna. Now in sports. Keegan Hurst, a captain for the Batley Bulldogs, a UK rugby team, came out last week. He stated, "If I can help in any way towards it not becoming as much of a taboo, that can only be a good thing."
A lot has changed in the realm of sports in terms of LGBT athletes and the role sports have in international LGBT politics. The call for a boycott of the Sochi Olympics in light of recent Russian laws making illegal any kind of public declaration of one's sexuality is a perfect example of the important discussions about international human rights happening around sports. Not only are more and more athletes coming out in sports, but there are out athletes entering sport and willing to be spokespeople for LGBT issues. Further, many national and international sports bodies and organizations are taking a stand on promoting inclusion and speaking out against homophobia. You are listening to Prism PDX, a weekly radio magazine show focusing on the LGBT community. Let's check out some entertainment. This week, I thought I'd talk about some albums that are set to be released this fall. Janet Jackson, who's kicking off the second leg of her tour Unbreakable here in Portland on January 12th, is back with a new album that still hasn't even been titled. It's coming out sometime this fall, and we've got a little taste from that right now with No Sleep. Disclosure are back. I love these guys, Brothers Guy and Howard Lawrence. They helped catapult Sam Smith's career with their big hit, Latch. So it's no surprise they've got him back for the new album. Plus, Grammy-winning jazz vocalist Gregory Porter, the follow-up to their game-changing house-infused debut album, Settle.
Caracal drops September 25th.
And here's a little taste from that. This is Omen, Sam Smith and Disclosure. Also coming out on September 25th, the new Peaches album called Rub. We've been playing this song quite a bit on My Planet Radio. Peaches is going to be at Roseland Theater October 5th. From that, here's Light in Places.
beauty coming out of my. I'm an everlasting iconoclast. I came to destroy the past. My stargasm makes the blast. Shake the system, then pass. Liberate en masse. Eliminate the class. All humans free at last. So much beauty coming out of my. I'm an everlasting iconoclast. I came to destroy the past. My stargasm makes the blast. Shake the system, then pass. Liberate en masse. Eliminate the class.
Welcome, dear listeners, to Preference, an Experiment in Queer Radio here on KBOO. We were just listening to Prism PDX, a show created by the folks down at Wild Planet Radio here in Portland. Thanks so much for putting Prism together, Wild Planet folks. We are here with a couple of folks from Smirk. Welcome, Dee Dee.
Yes, thank you.
You're a staff person at Smirk?
I am a staff advocate over at Smirk, yep.
Thank you. Smirk is the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center here in Portland, a great program that's been going on for a long time. We're really excited to be talking about it. We also have Luke here with us.
Hello there.
Welcome. And Luke, you're a participant in Smirk programming.
Yes, I've been going there for about a year now.
Fabulous. Welcome, you two. Smirk, how long has Smirk been...
1998 is officially, I think, when they got their nonprofit licensing. And it was Zan Gibbs and two other youth who I am blanking on their names, and I apologize for that.
So the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center started here in Portland, 1998. We're gonna say that. And Smirk has moved around town a few different places, a few different locations, and it sounds like Smirk has landed in a place that's really exciting. Is that right?
Yes. Smirk has moved through several different locations. It was on Sandy last, MLK in Belmont before that, and now it's on 12th and Columbia. It's located in a space shared by New Avenues for Youth, which is a social servants agency downtown, and it's began a rather lucrative partnership with New Avenues for Youth.
Wonderful. Briefly tell us what New Avenues for Youth is.
New Avenues for Youth is a social servants agency for at-risk youth, and they provide a large variety of resources in partnership with other social service agencies in the downtown area.
Now, what is it like for Smirk to be downtown? Years and years, all these years on the east side, and suddenly, it's a whole different world over there.
I would definitely say it's changed a lot in the culture of both the people that we get there and also the demographics, because downtown, which is where most of the social service agencies are located, you do get slightly more homeless youth than you would get before. Which is really great because it offers resources and opens the doors to those people. But also you get a lot of parents bringing their younger kids in, kids younger than we usually got as we had the upper ages of teenagers. But now we have, I think the most common demographic in our space right now is 12 to 16, Dee Dee?
I would say, yeah, that probably makes up for about 40% of who's coming in. And then the other 60% are usually going to be someone that's focusing and needing services of some sort. Just because when you add the intersectionality of being homeless on top of queer identity, the resources that are available for you kind of dwindle. It's probably one of the reasons why we see an influx of people specifically looking for services that are experiencing some form of homelessness.
Let's talk about that 12 to 16 year old age group, folks who are coming to Smirk in greater numbers. What is their experience like?
I think a lot of the experiences of those youth and the many youth I've talked to, a lot of them are from more rural counties surrounding Portland. So most of them are not from the local Portland area. They come from Clackamas. They come from Gresham. They come from Beaverton. Some even come from all the way out in Sherwood, because many of these smaller suburbs and towns don't have the queer resources that downtown Portland does now with the inclusion of Smirk in the location. And it's much easier to reach there. And it's in a neighborhood that parents will feel comfortable dropping their kids off and it's also very easily reached by transit. Mm-hmm. So children, young teenagers, will be able to like get off from school and then take a bus and go directly to Smirk after.
How are those families hearing about Smirk?
I think a lot of that is going to be through our social media. So Facebook, word of mouth, also being connected to the Continuum. Is another way. We have also been great efforts over the last year to be visiting QSAs in the Portland area. So that also helps provide a little bit of information of where we're at and what we're doing. I would like to add on to what we do that probably draws in the smaller or the younger aged youth. And that would be some of the groups that we're facilitating. So we are doing a gender group, and we are doing a mental health facilitation. We are also doing this yoga every Monday, and then we're also doing a summer project with a circus project, which is really awesome. It's teaching youth how to juggle, how to work silks. So I think that draw of actually adding programming into Smirk's calendar has really changed and influenced people to come back down and enjoy Smirk now in a different way maybe than what Smirk was being used for in the past.
Let's go back in that just a moment. And QSA, Queer Student?
Yeah, that would be the Queer Student Alliance, also known as GSAs as well, Gay Straight Alliance as well.
And how does Smirk interact and intersect with these alliances?
I think in a large way it interacts with these because Elena Medina, who is also another staff facilitator at Smirk, a big part of her job is reaching out to these community resources, visiting different schools. QSAs will actually reach out to Smirk. You can quite easily Google like queer resources in Portland and find out about Smirk. And a lot of them will reach out to Smirk and be like, hey, can you come in and like put on a presentation or workshop? And Smirk does that quite frequently, both with QSAs and its Bridge 13. Trainings.
What is Bridge 13?
Would you like to speak about that, Didi?
Yeah, Bridge 13 is our cultural comprehension. So they're going to go into schools, businesses, anyone that needs a little bit more information on how to interact and be more inclusive. And by inclusive, meaning specifically to LGBTQ specific inclusion. So how to use pronouns, how to approach people, how to talk to people, and how to really be inclusive in your business when you're doing your hiring practices as well.
Wonderful. We were, Luke, you were talking a bit about the suburbs, the further out parts of the metro region. And Dee Dee, before we got on the air, you were talking a little bit about the Living Room in Clackamas. Do you want to say something about that organization?
I do. I hope anyone listening right now will get online and look up the Living Room and find a way that you can either donate time or money, because I hear that they are needing both right now. And Smirk is doing really well financially as of right now. And we want to make sure that we're spreading and engaging with other community organizations that are kind of focusing on the same work that we're doing. It's not about us being the only people that are doing this work when there are other places that are doing this work. So anytime that we can kind of share a platform, we would love to do it. I wish I could have invited someone down to talk on their behalf, because I don't feel too comfortable going into too much detail about their organization.
Now, you mentioned Smirk's finances. We know that Smirk was with, and I'll remind folks, Smirk, if you're tuning in, is the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center here in downtown Portland. Smirk was with the Q Center, that was its host and fiscal sponsor, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And Q Center ran into some bumps over the last couple of years, and especially last winter. I do know that the current folks who are in charge of Smirk, Justin and Stacy, are very, very generous about wanting to help Smirk. And
they are. We still have a relationship with Q Center, a fabulous one. So we do a 20-something group that kind of reaches outside of the age limit that we're working with. At Smirk, we actually work with 13 to 23-year age. Mm-hmm. And then for Q Center, we have a group called 20-something, and that is going to be for 20 to 26-year-olds. So it's that intermediate time of when a youth ages out. They still have something to do. They don't just get cut off from our services. And they really focus on community action projects. They cleaned outside of our building. They just went on a nature walk. Hopefully they're going to be doing more focus type like that. They meet at Q Center on the last Wednesday of every month. And then the other three Wednesdays of the month, they do community service projects out in the community. Really important. So yeah, we're still working with Q Center, and we love that Jason and Justin, or Stacy and Justin, have really been able to help kind of change the atmosphere of Q Center and make it even more inclusive than it was before.
Mm-hmm. So now SMRC is with New Avenues for Youth, and it sounds like that's turning out to be a great partnership.
Mm-hmm. I think it's been a really lucrative partnership for both, because it brings the sort of outreach and inclusiveness of SMRC to NAFI's endeavors, which is New Avenues for Youth. And that's really important because one of the largest populations of homeless youth are queer. So that bridges the gap of how do you care for queer youth who have their own unique needs and quite frequently get kicked out of their homes even to this day, even with how our society is progressing. And SMRC really does a good job of lending education both to social service agencies, and we have counselors. We have other people that can like speak to parents on youth's behalfs. We have like many different options and avenues for youth to be taken care of there.
So let's stop a moment and talk about how folks can find SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center.
I love that. So you can find us online via Facebook at SMRC. You can also find the youth page if you're a youth-oriented age and you would prefer to hear from the youth from SMRC. They have their own page that they run and operate. And then we also have a website, smrc.org. You can check us out there. It's always going to have information for all of the staff. So we all have public emails. So if anyone wants to contact us, go ahead and feel free. We'll send you more information. Those usually are the three mainstays. And then there's also the Continuum. So the Continuum is connected with NIA, Janus, Outside In, New Avenues for Youth. So any youth that maybe isn't going to have direct connections to Facebook or social media are going to be able to find out about us through one of those services as well.
Exciting. And that's smyrc.org.
Thank you. It is.
You're listening to Preference, a Queer Experiment in Radio here on KBOO. I'm Alan, your host, and I have Dee Dee and Luke with SMRC with us. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of SMRC's programming. And I think I want to come back and talk a little bit about the experiences that youth are having themselves in a broader context of living in this crazy world. But let's start with what SMRC's up to.
We're up to so much. So we've been doing a summer project called the Circus Project, or we've been working with the Circus Project, because that's their name. They're also findable on Facebook as well. And they have been coming in and teaching juggling, kind of mat tumbling, and then also silks over at their own space. And that's been happening all summer. And like I mentioned earlier before, we also have our gender group and our mental health facilitation groups that are really powerful. And those happen separately. So we'll go up into a different room out of the space so we can all get together. Then we also get ideas from our steering committee directly through our youth. One of the ideas is one of our youth wanted the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to come down. And that's exactly what we did. They came on Saturday and they did makeup with our youth, and it was really powerful. They sat around for like 2 hours gabbing and doing makeup. It was awesome. So things like that. We try to keep it educational. We try to keep it social. And then we also try to bring in things that are going to be empowerment. So bringing someone in to maybe register everyone that's 18 years old to vote. Something like that. That's really going to give power to the youth. We have a new idea of what empowerment looks like for the staff towards the youth. We don't believe that we are giving empowerment. We believe that we are encouraging youth to their own empowerment. No one has a jar of empowerment, and they don't get to pass it out. You create that from within, and hopefully the people that are in your lives are encouraging that. And that's really what the staff wants to be doing, is encouraging empowerment.
And Luke, what's your experience of that from the youth side?
So I've been coming to SMRC a little over a year now. I began coming to SMRC back in the Sandy location, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And things have changed really dramatically. We've tried out several different ways of like trying to like give youth empowerment, but the more we tried to do that, the more we discovered you can't simply give someone the tools to succeed in their life, both in like leadership and the things they're interested in, as well as their personal lives. You can't simply give them those tools if they don't know how to use them. So I think a lot of what SMRC does now is not so much just tossing the tools at people as teaching them how to use the tools so that they can succeed on their own once they leave SMRC and in their own personal lives outside of SMRC.
How much are the youth involved in actually managing SMRC's affairs and its programming?
A great deal, I would say. Like Dee Dee said, we have the steering committee, which that decides all the rules, all the things that we consider acceptable within the space. Almost all the ground rules for the space have come from the youth of this is the space that we want to cultivate, and this is the kind of atmosphere we want to cultivate in our space. So a lot of that is directly down to the youth of what they want to be allowed in the space, with the staff there as backup to ensure that it remains a safe space and an accommodating space for all involved.
Now, Dee Dee mentioned the main space at SMRC. Let's talk about what that looks like. What happens there?
That's where everything goes down. That's where all the fun happens. Lots and lots and lots of food and lots and lots and lots of music and then lots and lots of art. I think those three things are really the main staples, and it probably always been the main staples throughout the years at SMRC for all staff and all youth involved. But then we're also doing our Friday night and Saturday night programming now, which is where we ask all the youth at least one night, one time a night on Friday or Saturday to sit in a circle, and we do our pronouns, we do a check-in question, and we allow everyone to really kind of look at each other's faces and interact with each other. And I think that is one component that hasn't been youth-led, it has been staff-led, and we were asking the youth to do that for us because we've been showing up, we do a lot for the youth, and we carry on their wishes of what kind of programming they want us to bring into them. And we figured, you know, asking them to sit down for 10 to 15 minutes on a Friday and Saturday night and kind of all interact with each other wasn't really overstepping as much as it was asking and providing, you know, like, we're going to do this, let's have an equal exchange here of how we can actually like interact, and all of us can use our skills to better each other. And you know, the staff all have education bases and backgrounds into youth services, so I think it's really important sometimes that they're allowed to excel as well with the youth.
And I doubly think that it helps, like I mentioned earlier, create and foster that sense of community, because we don't want SMRC to just be a drop-in center or a community center where you go there and like you get food and you listen to music and you sit off in the corner with maybe a few select friends. We want to create a space where youth, both 13 to 23, all of them have something in common, being queer, and all of them have their own varied experiences to bring to the table. And we want to really create that community where all of them can sit in a circle and be like, yes, I do have something in common with them, and I do see their humanity, and it's a safe space for many, many people when they don't have those spaces outside of SMRC to just sit down with other queer people and know that they can talk about their own life experiences without being judged for it.
Wonderful. Now, I want to ask, to the extent that you can speak to this, with this increasing participation of folks who are between 12 and 16 years old, what are you hearing about their experiences as queer youth?
Well, I'm watching their experiences as a staff member because I watch all the youth. I pay attention. I see some of the youth coming in, and the first 3 weeks they're there, they don't say a word to any of the other youth except for check-in. They'll be on their headphones, and then you'll slowly start to see them interacting. You'll see them start building relationships. It's beautiful to watch a youth blossom into their own character and take their own power back and add their own voice into a voice that maybe wasn't there ever before because they didn't know that they could have this identity. They didn't know that other people spoke this way or looked this way or had these feelings. They thought it was just them. And then everyone tells them, oh, but you're not alone, you're not alone. When they come to SMRC, it's proven that they're not alone. And I think that's the biggest difference. And that's really what we see in those ages because they're still finding themselves. They'll be finding themselves for years to come.
I I really do feel a lot of what you said, because I too was that youth pretty much, and you saw how I blossomed essentially. And I do think that feeling of finding a safe space to know and have that realization that, hey, I'm not alone, is very important, especially so the younger you are when you're a queer youth. And I think that's a really valuable thing. And I would say that's like 70% of what SMRC is all about, of like teaching the youth that they have value in themselves, regardless of what other people may attribute to them, and that they can have a community of their own.
This is a little bit of a vague question, I think. But do you have some sense that the issues facing youth in their early teens are different than, you know, somebody who's 20 or 25 faced in when they were younger?
You know, that's so deep, because I experienced the latter part of that statement. So I grew up, you know, as a teenager in the 90s. It was hard, but I know it's still as hard for some of those youth. I think you can make the world a little bit brighter and easier. It doesn't mean the individual experience gets easier. It doesn't mean the individual experience of someone finding themselves gets easier, just because maybe people aren't using, you know, derogatory terms as much as they used to in the past. And because we have gay marriage now, everyone thinks that youth problems are solved. That's just not the issue. And I think everyone can remember in childhood, or if they're still in childhood, children sometimes can be the cruelest. And it's because we live in a world that's full of cruelty, and that's what they see. So,
and yeah, I'm about the generation after yours. Like, I was born in the 90s. So maybe not the generation directly after yours. But for me, yes, like, I can tell the difference between people my age, like their young 20s, as opposed to people a decade younger than me. And I see such a dramatic difference in the lives they lead. And it makes me want to cry a lot of times out of happiness, because I see that even with that mere decade, that things have improved so much, but we still have so far to go. Because you will see from like one school district to another, of like one school that is so inclusive, you know, the youth there are so loved, both for their gender expression and their orientation. And then you'll hear these truly horrific stories of like parents who won't accept children and teachers who won't accept children. So you really see it across the board, of kind of a patchwork effort of like progressiveness and then people who are not stepping up to the plate to care for the people who really need to be cared for.
That was such a good word, patchwork. That described it perfectly.
This is Preference, a queer experiment in radio. I'm Alan, your host. We're here with folks from Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. And I want to take a moment and promote my own event.
Yes, please, because I think I know what it is.
I organize every year the Thrill the World Portland. It's the local outpost of a simultaneous worldwide thriller dance. So this is our ninth year. And it's always the Saturday before Halloween, so this year it's October 24th. And we do practices for about a month beforehand. They're public, welcome to anybody, any age, any physical ability. And it does take some work to learn the dance. It's a full 5.5 minutes of dancing. But a lot of people have done it. We average about 175 people in zombie costumes doing this dance out in public every year. And we do it in Inner Northeast Portland. I haven't finished my paperwork for the site, so I won't announce it just yet. But for folks who have done the dance in the past, it'll probably be a familiar site. And we do it as a fundraiser for SMRC, Portland Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. So we collect donations. And last year we raised something like $900. And that is really what keeps me coming back to organize this. I know the dance pretty well. I've probably done it nearly as many times as anybody in the world. We're talking hundreds of times I've done the dance myself. So I know it pretty well, and that means I can teach it pretty well. I can help you learn learn the dance. Maybe some other great teachers as well who are on board. So look for us on Facebook, Thrill the World Portland. Just look it up. Or you can, we have a website somewhere. I haven't updated it this year. So don't look for that just yet, but maybe in a few weeks you can do a Bing search and find it. So that's Thrill the World Portland. We will be dancing at the same time as people all around the world on October 24th. So come out and learn the dance and dance with us and help Smirk a little bit. Now, Dee Dee, you mentioned earlier that Smirk, Portland Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, is developing a relationship with OCUS, the Oregon Queer Youth Summit.
Yeah, we've been helping out with them the past few years, but I know that we are going to try and help out even more next year. So if people are interested in learning about that, participating in that, I would love it if they would reach out to Smirk. You could reach out to our website for our staff emails, and I would say focus on Dee Dee or Elena for those questions. OCUS is really about getting youth to facilitate classes and teaching. So we take the adult out of it. We are there to serve them food, and that's about it. We set it up, and then we walk away, and it's really incredible. They had some really impressive leadership skills this year. They taught drag. They taught a class on asexuality. There was a boundaries class. I mean, they are just hitting it out of the park. I'd also like to announce, a lot of people may or may not heard that we are opening up transitional housing, which is coming up. We will be doing applications in the next few weeks. You'll be able to contact us if you have a youth that might be looking for permanent housing in a queer specific house, and that's going to be over on Division Street, and we'll have more information about that. You could also check out New Avenues for Youth or our website smirk.org for announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks that are going to be specific for that.
Tell us just a little bit more about this transitional housing.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be the first one in Oregon, and we're really excited about it. A staff will be creating kind of the system that's going to be in place for how we select the youth. We're also going to be case managing the youth as well, so we'll be going over there and helping out, probably doing dinner with them at least once a week, hopefully something fun like that, having music cleanup day. It's really important. We're going to have room for 4 to 6 youth, and they are going to have to be either working or active in school and using the SMIRC program as well. So it is going to be an encouragement model that is going to hopefully lead them to being young adults, being able to provide for themselves once they have went through transitional housing and kind of gotten a glimpse of what it means to live in the adult world, work in the adult world, create bills, pay bills. They really need a focus on that. I feel like a lot of our youth aren't taught basic skills a lot. Home ec needs to come back.
And if I've read your Facebook posts correctly, Smirk can use donations for the house.
Absolutely. We are looking for donations, and you can contact me. My information is on the website. We are looking right now for kind of big ticket items. So we need bookcases. We need a dining room table that seats 8 and possibly dressers and bed frames. We are working on mattresses right now, and we just got a refrigerator donated today. So we have been getting some really great things from the community. So thank you if you're listening and you were one of them.
Wonderful. And that website where you can find information on Smirk and contact information for staff folks is smyrc.org. Let's begin to move towards last thoughts on how Smirk operates for youth. Luke?
I really think that as we go into the future of Smirk, a lot of things immediately come to mind of we can't simply be stagnant and rest on our laurels, so to speak of. We always have to keep pressing forward, and we have to like push the limit of what we can do and what we can bring to the table, because for queer youth, you know, the world will not wait, and we need to keep up both with changing times and ensure that we're providing resources in all the many, many ways that queer youth need.
Yeah, I echo that. I mean, I would say that being a person that is working with the youth, and once being a youth, there's power in knowing that I've come this far, that I'm able to give back to maybe someone who doesn't think that they have the worth, or maybe they can work in an office setting, or maybe they can work in social justice, is because they're queer and they're weird looking. And I'm here to tell those youth, I'm all of that, and I am doing that. And just as much as I'd like to think that I'm in providing encouragement to empowerment for them, I want them to know they empower me every single time I'm in there. They make me check myself. They constantly are reminding me of what it means to really truly support someone and what that looks like for them rather than yourself. I think that's one of the most challenging things, and it's one of the biggest learning lessons that I've gained from there.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I'm like I said earlier, it truly is a space where youth can blossom, figure themselves out, and hopefully become future leaders in the community. And more importantly than that, grow up to be healthy and happy people.
Wonderful. We've been chatting with Dee Dee and Luke with Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having us.
This has been Preference and Experiment in Queer Radio. I want to put in a plug for an event coming up. It's called Radio Silence. It's a movie put together by a gentleman named Sean Brown. He's a local fellow. We had him on the radio here at KBOO a few months ago. And Radio Silence is his movie, and I am in it. I play a radio host, but that's a minor role, and it's not the important part. What it is a look at a family, two gay men in a relationship, raising a teenager, and their family dynamics, which are they're in a very challenging situation, and they need to find their way through it in the face of an ecological crisis. So that's debuting September 6th at the Hollywood Theater. That's Radio Silence. Come out and check it out. The folks who play those characters who are in that family situation do a great job. That's Radio Silence, September 6th at the Hollywood Theater. Hard Knock Radio is coming up next. I'm Alan. This is Preference. Thanks so much.